with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
It's the Albany legislature here that's at fault, not the unions.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show.
There's some things we have to have taxes for, and that's fine, but you just have to stand up and say some of these things we can't afford.
Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right. Thank you very much, Bill Rock. Yes, indeed. Friday get together here on the John Gambling Show means in the 8 o'clock hour. Mayor Michael Bloomberg joins us. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning. I have a question for you. I was thinking about this last night. For the last few weeks, we have had spectacular weather, but it has felt like fall.
Yesterday, the last couple of days has been perfect, right?
During the day, hot and chilly and pleasant in the evening.
You're complaining?
No. It's, you know, we haven't had any power. There were power outages all the time. Sadly, a tree comes down and that sort of thing, and feeders do burn out. But fundamentally,
except for that heat wave we had.
We had one small heat wave, yeah. Global cooling.
Now, you just stepped into something right here because this has been the coolest year, 2008, the first half of 2008.
Yeah, in the last 5 years. There are cyclical things, and then there are the other long-term trends.
You want to jump into your windmill idea? I love the picture in the Post of you as a Don Quixote.
We have a scrapbook, and you can rest assured that goes in it. And what they missed was I did this inner circle thing where we raised money for charity, and the press spoofs the mayor, and then the mayor comes back with a Broadway cast once a year and spoofs the press. And a number of years ago, we used the cast from Don Quixote. And it was hysterical, but they didn't bring us back to that one.
So are you tilting at windmills?
Tilting windmills. I thought I was ahead of the curve. It turns out, if you read the papers, 400 years ago they had windmills in New York. I'm so far behind, it's unbelievable.
There are windmills
I'm
that still exist out on Long Island.
There are a lot of buildings. The Times had an interesting story yesterday of, you know, some big new buildings being built around the world where they're very high, and they, in the middle of the buildings, have pass-throughs for the wind.
I believe in Dubai,
Windmills are not a solution, total solution to anything. They are another thing that can help. They have problems. They aren't the cheapest thing in the world, but they are a part of a package that you should certainly explore and probably implement to free us from dependence on foreign oil and help us keep from polluting the world. Yeah, there's two problems here. One, we have the problem of we are transferring our wealth from the Western world to enormous transfer of wealth, and it's to people that don't, in countries, some of them are upstanding Western countries even. Some of the Scandinavian countries export a lot of oil. But some of them really are funding terrorists and fueling turmoil around the world. And we just keep sending them our money. It's an enormous transfer.
The other major issue here is the fact that our oil supply can be cut off instantaneously.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could say that.
If the
bad guys want to do it, they'd have to cut off the entire world. It's a very big market, and oil is fundamentally oil. There are different grades, but fundamentally. So if they, you know, Iran can't stop sending oil because Iran needs to import gasoline. They kill them and they kill all their own economies. So there is some protection. I don't think that's so much of a risk as you could have a severe decline if some pipelines were broken up for a short period of time. You'd have shortages and the price would skyrocket. And I'm not even sure the shortages would exist. There's a lot of oil in tanks and on ships and that sort of thing. But fundamentally, we are using an enormous amount of petroleum products. The reason that oil is so high is not speculation. There is always speculation. Speculation up, speculation down, that's fine. You want that in commodity markets because it dampens some of the fluctuations sometimes. It may exacerbate others. It also gives producers and users the ability to hedge themselves. So cereal manufacturers buy corn ahead. Farmers may sell corn ahead. It gives both specificity and lets them plan and invest and that kind of thing. But we are transferring our wealth overseas. You've got to stop that. And the other thing is we are using fuels inefficiently and in ways that pollute. Coal is the worst. Coal is far and away the worst polluter of any of the fossil fuels. We have lots of coal. You can argue that's a blessing, but it's also a curse because we're using it. China, same thing. A lot of their plants are coal-fired.
Most of their plants are because they have unlimited supplies.
Right, and people say, you know, when you get to the legislatures, they say, oh, well, technology will find a way to sequester CO2. Someday, maybe, but there's not a lot of evidence that they're making a great deal of progress. And you can't sit here and depend on a magic bullet. They said, well, let's have a Manhattan Project. There's plenty of capital looking for solutions to these problems. So far, nobody's come up with something that scales up to the kind of real world that we need to make those fuels non-polluting. So we want to find ways to use less and use alternative sources.
What about drilling off the coasts, increasing domestic supply?
I mean, as long as you do it responsibly, I don't have a big problem with that. It's some, you know, people say, oh, well, we're not going to get anything for 17 years.
I said, that's the silliest argument.
Okay, so wait 16 years and it'll only be 1 year away. We do drill a lot. We should probably drill more. But having said that, the real answer is to use less. And what New York City can do is a little bit of alternative sources, for example, using the tides and using wind.
Great demonstration project over at Roosevelt Island.
Yeah, it sort of works, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a long way to go.
It's got a long, all these things. If you don't try them, I mean, and you know, unfortunately, in our world, we've come to, not only is everybody, there has to be somebody responsible for every tragedy. There has to be, everybody's a hero, everybody's a victim. But also, if it doesn't work perfectly, you're a failure. I mean, the business world just doesn't even bother to read this stuff. And if they did, they'd shake their head saying, what are you talking about? You could cure 98% of the cancers, and I guarantee you the newspapers, or some of them, would write, you didn't do 2%, you're a failure, the 2% left. I mean, the real world is, if you make some progress, that's great. And if you don't make progress, at least you tried. At least you know what path not to go down the next time. So wind and tides are two, and solar, are three things that we can do here in the city. If we could reduce our consumption find alternative fuels for 20% of our energy needs, that'd be a very big deal. If we could reduce our consumption by 30%, which is, remember, the city's goal for city buildings by 2017 and hopefully for everybody by 2030, that would make another big difference. And maybe, just maybe, if we do it, other parts of the country, other parts of the world, other industries and technologies would try to do similar things on the generation side. We really don't have any coal-fired plants in the city. We have a few, I think, oil-fired. Natural gas is cheaper and cleaner. Natural gas.
Right.
Although, you know, you fly into Washington. Washington National Airport, and there's an enormous power plant just to the south, I think it is, of National Airport, and they have coal. I mean, I hadn't seen a coal plant. Enormous piles of coal, and you see them offloading, and the bulldozers dumping it into the conveyor belts that take it into the fire. But we should do our own thing to the extent we can, as an example, but also for very selfish reasons. It's good for us.
This energy issue is one of the major energy issues that are on the table that face the United States. Do you believe the two gentlemen that want to be president of the United States address it adequately?
No. I think it's very fair to say no. I think they both have said that they understand the problem. I think that's true. I think they're both intelligent enough to understand the problem and can get people to help them with the technical details of the problem. And I will say my eyes glaze over when they are asked a specific question about one technical thing, and they say, oh, absolutely, I'm in favor of that. Come on, you know, you need to have your advisors for that. But I think they understand it. I think they just, unfortunately, our whole political system is so paralyzed by special interests. The last petroleum energy bill that was passed, I said, was done because the primary caucuses in Iowa were up at exactly the same time.
Ethanol.
Sure, I mean, it was done to win votes in Iowa. There are going to be losers, and there are going to be winners. And there are going to be benefits, and there are going to be costs. Does either candidate stand up and say explicitly no? And every expert on politics says they can't do that because they won't get elected. I personally, I'm not an expert on politics. I've run for office twice. That's it. I don't know, but my what I've always tried to do is to just do what you think is right. And I think the public is a lot smarter than all of these experts, and that the public will understand. They'll say, I don't agree with that person, but they're being honest. They've got an intelligent view on it. And while I don't agree on this particular thing, on balance, that's the kind of person I want to lead. And that's true whether it's president, governor, mayor, whether it's a legislator at any of the three levels.
All right. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, never at a shortage for opinion. We'll get some more as we continue here on the John Gambling Show. 18 minutes after 8 o'clock. Coming right back. 21 minutes after 8 o'clock, Mayor Michael Bloomberg with John Gambling here at News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Tomorrow, Saturday, do you have a ticket to Springfield, Illinois, for the announcement of the vice president?
I do not. Nobody called me.
Your phone didn't ring? I saw you playing on the BlackBerry. I thought maybe you were getting the call.
Let me say this. If I get a call from Barack Obama today asking me to go to Springfield, Illinois tonight, unfortunately, Diana and I have dinner plans. I can't go.
Okay. All right.
I have absolutely no idea who he's going to pick. I have absolutely no idea who John McCain is going to pick, except that I can help you. There are roughly 330 million people in the country, and I will not be picked. So now you're down to 329,999,999.
It is good political sport to speculate. The media loves that kind of thing. No speculation.
You know, somebody once said to me, a very smart person, you go away on vacation, you come back, you get all the newspapers piled up. Don't start reading the oldest. Read the newest, because the stories in the oldest about the world's going to end in 5 days, if it's 6 days worth of papers, you don't have to read the story.
The Deutsche Bank report. Not flattering for a lot of reasons. And, of course, the worst, of course, is the loss of the life.
I have read a handful of other reports similar. This report that everybody's talking about really does not address the issues of permitting and lack or inspections or lack thereof previously, or what happened, why the standpipe had been apparently cut in the basement and how long ago. Could have been 6 months earlier. I don't know. This is the report that the fire department does every time there is a line of duty death. And they try to look at all their procedures. If you look at every single one of them, you can sit there and say, why didn't they go left rather than right? Well, if they'd gone left, there wouldn't have been a death and there wouldn't have been a report. So you only will see these reports showing problems. Judgments are made. Sometimes there is no right answer. Information sometimes is imperfect. They can assume. They really don't know exactly what happened to these two brave firefighters. They can tell you where they are, where they were found. They can tell you how much oxygen. One had 5 minutes of oxygen in his tank. The other's tank was emptier. They can tell you the direction they looked like they were going. They can tell you what mayday calls, if any, they had made earlier, what contact they'd had with others, how long it took to get to them, those kinds of things. But there's always going to be some unknowns. And they try to tighten their procedures. You can, for example, say one of the recommendations, all of which get implemented, is, you know, there was apparently a lot of chatter on the radios. And that's one of the problems. When everybody wants better communication, you don't really want everybody to be able to talk to everybody, because then nobody can talk to anybody. And that's why when people scream about interoperability, they really don't know what they're talking about. You don't want every firefighter to be able to talk to every cop the way the military would do it and the way we do it now. And our radios are totally interoperable where we need them. You go up the chain, your chain of command, and then you're at the top, higher up, they talk to the chain of command of the other agency, and it goes down that way. Because these are, say they're paramilitary organizations, I suppose they have a similar structure. And when lives are on the line, you have to follow procedures, and you have to have, when the lieutenant says to the firefighter, take that hose and go through that door, you want to make sure that the firefighter does it. It's lieutenant's judgment that you're going to depend on. When the sergeant says to the police officer, cover that, go here, do this, you want them to do it explicitly. You want them to think, but you have to have, it's not like in your world, in my world, where there's time for discussion. There's not time for discussion in a lot of these cases. So it talks about those kinds of things. And it's a great tragedy. There's nothing we can do to bring it back. Now, the questions that the public wants answers to, or the press is talking about, of why weren't the fire department inspections done? There was a firehouse right next door. They knew the building was coming down. As a matter of fact, a few weeks
ago. Yeah, number 10 is right across the street.
A few weeks or months earlier, something, remember, fell off the building, went right through the firehouse. So they certainly knew. Why did they not do it? The district attorney, Bob Morgenthaler's office, asked us to not conduct any investigation, not to talk to the chiefs at that house and find out why, while he conducts an investigation. So we can't even ask to find out. Was anything done that is criminally negligent? Nobody accuses anybody of deliberately doing anything. Was it criminally negligent? Two people are dead. But that's up to the district attorney to decide.
Let me ask you this question, because we have this report, as you say, you've read other reports about the Deutsche Bank building.
Or no, about other incidents where firefighters had died.
Okay. We've had the crane incidents. We've had concrete questions. Is building inspection, has it been looser than it should have been?
I don't think so. If you just, you have to realize we have an enormous amount of construction going. And a handful of events get enormous play. But if you look at the numbers on balance, no, the buildings department, Patricia Lancaster made a lot of improvements. Bob Mandry, the new commissioner, is going to make a lot more improvements. But on balance, I've looked at it, and you say, why did they not do this? Why did they not do that? We have 300,000 employees. We have, I don't know how many, 10,000 people work for the building department. We have X thousands of jobs all over the city. I think we can do a lot better, whether it's a union job or a non-union job, whether it's a big construction project or a small one, whether it's done by a massive worldwide company or a small mom-and-pop construction company. Everybody is too lax, and we can tighten up, and that's what Mandry is going to work on.
What's the go-forward on the Deutsche Bank? What's the plan now?
They were bringing it down by abating and deconstructing or demolishing at the same time, floor by floor. They decided to abate the whole building and then bring it down.
That's because of the particles from the World Trade Center event, the contamination of the floors.
Well, you have in the building mold and asbestos and lots of other stuff, some of which was in the building anyway, right. It's just part of construction material,
sure.
Some of which was blown in. But I'm not an expert to know. They were doing it. If we hadn't had the fire, that building would be down by now. And they were abating and demolishing at the same time. And if there hadn't been any accidents, it would have been fine. So, it's one of these, thank you, after the fact. There's a number of different parties involved. The papers are always screaming it doesn't come down fast enough. Keep in mind, we have the federal OSHA and the federal environmental people. Apparently there was some bad blood between some of the people here in the city. I think criticized the feds, at least that's the allegation. But our experience, the city's experience with the federal government, is they've been as cooperative as you can ask for. I have nothing but good things to say about them. But it's the LMDC, the Lower Manhattan Development Corporation, that is actually the agency that I think they technically own the building, but this is their job. The city doesn't do it. Now, the city's building department has regulations. You can even question, do those regulations apply? Because if it's an LMDC building, there's always that kind of stuff. Although, it's been just so many different people involved. And you say, well, why don't you just give it to one person? You can't. The law requires a lot of different things. The fire department is supposed to be involved. Clearly, they were not involved enough. I don't think there's any question about that. Why? We just can't ask yet. But it is coming down. I hope it gets down. I think it will get down, but I can't guarantee it'll get down by the middle of 2009. That's the plan. There's always something that could go wrong. God forbid another
accident.
That'd
be a year from now, probably, something like that, yeah.
One of the biggest problem is that this site, not only does JPMorgan Chase want to build a building there, and the longer you stall,
the more expensive it gets.
And, you know, who knows? The world changes. The markets change. The needs change. They, for example, now have Bear Stearns building, which they didn't have before, although Jamie Dimon has said they still will build there. They're just probably going to build something different than what they were going to build before, but who knows? You have that problem. But also, for the three Silverstein buildings, I think it's 2, 3, and 4, this is where the trucks that will deliver to those buildings will enter underground, go through security. Remember, this is a sure. particular site. And if this building isn't down, you can't do that. You can't build that entrance. And so Silverstein starts getting slowed down, and who knows?
It is a domino effect. There's no question about it. We've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg and you. And to that point, if you'd like to ask some questions, you'll get the opportunity coming up at the end of the program here. We'll make some time for you at 800-321-0710, 800-321-0710. Get in the queue. Let's go check the news on the half hour at 8:31. John Gambling, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 23 minutes before 9 o'clock on a Friday morning. I saw a story this week that you have a clock, a countdown clock in City Hall.
496 days and probably roughly 15 hours and 25 minutes, but who's counting?
Okay, but I understand there might be an asterisk under that now that about term limits. You've maybe thinking of more?
Term limits is one of those things. It was put in, actually, there's two ways to put in change or remove term limits. You can do it by public referendum, you can do it by city council action, both illegal. The history here is that there was a public referendum that put term limits in, and the term limits were set at 2 terms for all city offices, which means city council, public advocate, controller, and mayor. It was done again. The question came up again on the ballot, and it was reaffirmed. The city council changed term limits about 5 years ago. It had to do with those people who came into office in midterm and to whether or not their first term of shorter than 4 years would count. The city council passed, and I didn't veto. I assume I signed it. I just don't remember. The bill so that it wouldn't count. There is a lot of people who want to stay in office. Want to go from 2 to 3, or maybe they want to remove the limit. I've always been in favor of term limits. I continue to be. You can make an argument that 1 is too little, 2 is right, 3 is too much, or vice versa. Or you can pick the number. But I think term limits is, I've always thought it's a healthy thing, and I continue to believe that. There are people who think that, you know, a particular elected official, whether it's me or the controller or the public advocate or the city council people, are doing a good job and want to keep them in. The New York Times
is
always...
Your ratings are through the roof.
Well, you know, at the moment, wait until we deal with some of the problems we're going to have down the road. My ratings won't be there. But, you know, look, I've never looked at the ratings. I'm always happy when they go up, and to say I don't look at them is ridiculous. Of course you're happy. I remember when our ratings were a 31% approval rating. You put a smoking ban in and raise taxes, you'll get down there pretty quickly. You just got to do what's right. You can't worry about ratings. And I think even back, John, when my popularity was way low, down 31%, 75% of the people said he's honest and he's working hard and he cares. And that's why in the end they come back, because that's what matters here. But the Times has always argued, for example, that if the public wants to throw somebody out, they just vote for the opponent. And if they want to keep it, they should have a right to do it, and it is undemocratic to take away that right. Others argue that the public doesn't have enough information to make decisions and not enough of the public votes, and so term limits forces change, and I've always believed change is good. And I think over a long period of time, there is something to, there's certainly something to both arguments. We have this big debate in Albany about a property tax cap. What this is it's the proponents want the state to pass a law to fundamentally take away the right of a county to vote more taxes to pay, let's say, their teachers, firefighters, clean up the parks, whatever they want to do with the money more. You can argue that if the county wants to do it, let them do it. People in the county that don't want to pay it say, oh, well, not that many people come out to vote. Well, that's democracy. You know, some vote, some don't. Or you don't like the vote the way if you don't like the way the public votes, then go to Albany and change the law so that they don't have the right to vote. I will say I have some reservations about whether that's really democratic. I think it is true that very few people exercise their franchise. We have a very low voting rate in this country, and it's a disgrace. If you want to complain, complain at the voting booth. And if you don't go to the voting booth, I will say my eyes glaze over.
If the term limits through some mechanism were changed, would you want to be mayor for number three?
You know, I was talking to a mayor. I don't know if it's a private conversation, but a mayor from another city who I think is one of the great mayors of this country. His term limited out as well. And we were talking about that. And I said to him, he was talking about term limits in his case. And I said, the question is, if there weren't term limits, would you seek a third term? And his answer was he didn't know whether he would do that. You know, it is a job. I think being mayor is the best job. Whether you're a mayor of a town that has 100 people or 8.3 million people, it's a job where there's no right answer, but you can make a difference. Where people are never going to be satisfied, but they recognize that you're really doing something and respect you for it. You can face all sorts of problems. And in my case, the problems are bigger, not just in scale, but in terms of which issues you can deal with. I was invited the other day. I flew out to Las Vegas. I've been to Las Vegas a few times. I don't think I've ever spent 2 days there, but there's a lot of conventions there. They have convention space that, I mean, when you drive by, I went to visit somebody at the Sands Hotel. They have their private convention center, which is compared to Javits, we ought to be ashamed. I mean, this is our future, and we walked away from a chance to do that. You know how I feel about the Javits and the expansion that would have been paid for by the Jets next door. But anyways, I'm out there in Vegas, and I was invited by Harry Reid. Now, Harry Reid is a senator from Nevada. Okay, he's one of 100, except he happens to be the head of the Democratic Party in the Senate, and they control the Senate. So Harry Reid really is the gatekeeper for an enormous amount of legislation that influences New York City and New York State and America. And so the fact that I was invited by him to speak, you know, it was a good chance to talk about an issue I care about, energy in this case. But also a chance to become friendlier with, and it's not going to get Harry Reid to do what you want, but it is going to get Harry Reid to know who you are.
To answer your phone call, too.
And answer your phone call, sure, absolutely. Yeah. You know, they would call it access. I don't know that that's fair, because Harry Reid would talk to the mayor of New York City no matter who it is. But it's just, you know, I can call him first name basis. And that doesn't hurt the city. Was it a good use of one day out of my 8 years in office? Yeah, I think so. I think that we got good value, and I also played some golf in the morning, which was very nice.
There you go. Police.
And I paid for the trip, incidentally, just in case you wanted to ask. The public did not pay for that.
All right. The police contract. You finally got a PBA contract.
Good for the city, good for the cops. That's the bottom line. It is within the parameters that of the other contracts. It is in the budget. We have $2.3 billion deficit for 2010. I don't know whether that's realistic, because we don't know whether the tax revenues are going to be the way we projected them or expenses, but it's already in there. We've assumed that was one of the things that when I came into office, all contracts were done retrospectively. You can't then budget for the future intelligently, because if you put something in that's high, you're setting a floor. And if you put something in that's low, you're not being realistic, and then that's dishonest to the public. But we now have enough contracts going into the future that we can say, look, to every union, you may get paid a little bit differently based on how we pay you and which work rule changes, productivity, more hours if we need it, that sort of thing. But fundamentally, there is a pattern. The pattern's going to be followed. And so our budgeting is much more realistic. In this case, it addresses the issue that came out of an arbitration ruling a long time ago that the rookie cops were way underpaid. I've never been 100% sure that that's the issue, the reason that recruiting has been harder, because recruiting's been harder for cops throughout the country the last few years, probably more of influenced by the economic cycle. But it certainly doesn't hurt that we can now pay our rookie cops more. And in terms of paying cops so that they don't leave for Nassau County, you know, a handful did. You can overstate
Tom
that.
Tom Pay's pushing $100,000.
The real answer here is to try to pay all of our municipal workers, in this case the police, as well as we can, given the realities of this is the public's money and they don't want to spend more. So, you know, when somebody says, oh, you can never pay X kind of employee too much, you know, that's conceptually a nice philosophical argument, but the real world is you can't. And you, whatever you pay one, you probably have to pay the other agencies and other cops, and you can't pick and choose. And I will say the PBA, who, you know, when you can't come to an agreement, it takes two to make an agreement. So you don't go and criticize the PBA or the city. The bottom line is we haven't had a police contract where the police were working under a current contract since 1994. Now we have one going into the middle or end of 2010. We have a similar contract with fire. We have a similar contract with a number of other services. This is good for the city. It's good for the police. I think the cops who, you know, you can say they weren't happy. New York City police officers are happy. They're the best police department in the world. They love their jobs. Would they want to get paid more? Sure. They all have their families. They all want to share in the best life. You don't go into public service to make a lot of money. Having said that, you still would like to have it. And this is good for everybody.
All right. So another bad story, an unfortunate, tragic story this week. Josiah Brown, the 2-year-old that was killed, ACS. This was a family, dysfunctional.
Dysfunctional, though the mother has had three and is pregnant with her fourth kid.
I think she's 20 years old or
20 years old. You know, you say, well, put these kids in foster care. This is a girl who got pregnant, I think, when she was in foster care. Foster care is not a panacea for everything. It is another tool that ACS and the judge has. In this case, moving the kids away from the mother and back to the mother was done based on all sorts of gradual things that the court approved. The judge, I'm told, I don't think I know the judge, I don't even know the name, but I'm told this judge is a very thoughtful, intelligent judge. And, you know, you got to feel sorry for the judges as well as for the ACS workers. They have to make decisions. You can't take away every kid. You can't leave every kid. And sometimes you're going to make it wrong.
And to be part of a decision that has an outcome like this has got to be tragic,
you know,
for the people involved.
A reporter, I was in Las Vegas, and a reporter said to me, well, you know, what are you going to do? And I said, would you like the job of making the decision? Oh, no, I don't want it. Okay, thank you very much.
Above my pay grade.
Yeah, right.
Above my pay grade. Oh, you know what we're going to do
here? We should be thankful we have people who are willing to put their careers on the line.
You're exactly right. We're going to get some folks that want to ask you a question, Mr. Mayor. 800-321-0710 is our telephone number. We're coming right back to you. And right here, this portion of our program with the mayor brought to you by the 9 o'clock with Mayor Mike here on the John Gambling Show. We're going to let you ask the questions. We're going to start with David in the car. David, good morning. You've got the mayor.
Yes, good morning, Mayor Bloomberg.
Good morning, David.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm very interested in, number one, the trucks that are going across New Jersey to Pennsylvania with garbage. Suggestion, why don't we put that on railroads? And could you also explain about ocean dumping? That's, I think, a disgusting practice, and I think it needs to be stopped.
We don't do any ocean dumping. It's highly against the law. They used to do that years and years ago.
Yeah, the garbage barges. Yeah.
Yeah. Today, a lot of it does go by rail. Some goes by truck. I don't know whether it's cost or where you can get it on the rail. Our solid waste management plan, which gets every borough responsible for its own garbage, I know Staten Island's garbage, for example, goes out by rail. In the Bronx, I'm pretty sure it goes out by rail. Queens and Brooklyn, they're going to put it on barges and then take it elsewhere.
This is the new plan.
New plan, but the old plan.
Oh, the old plan,
after they closed the landfill, on Staten Island, Fresh Kills, the garbage goes to Pennsylvania. There's a couple of other states that take it, and they go in these big trucks. They're pretty sealed, but there's no question they're big trucks, and they pollute, and they give you traffic, and so
break
that's
your roads up.
Yeah, the only dumping in the ocean that we do that I know of is old subway cars, and I actually saw driving up the Harlem River the other day a whole bunch of them lined up. They take all the asbestos out, they clean them, they take anything that
it's a huge process,
right,
to get
and
them
then
ready.
They stack them up and they go out and they dump them and they make artificial reefs, which is supposedly good for the fish. But we stopped ocean dumping years ago, and in fact the city gets sued. I think one time we might have been indicted even, I don't remember, from the sewage that overflows when you have an enormous rainstorm, and that's why we're trying to fix the sewers.
Remember the needles that used to be found on the beaches of New York? Not a mention of those ever again. Disappeared. Went away.
They used to have needles in the parks, John. We don't have that. That was in a different world, and today we just don't have that. I can't tell you what perfect, but better.
Let's go to Robert in Staten Island. Robert, your question for the mayor.
Good morning, Mayor.
Hi.
Thank you. You know, you have a tremendous influence nationwide, actually. If you and the mayors of 10 of the largest cities got together, said to the automobile companies, look, we are, as of 2015, we will not buy any car unless it's a hybrid or electric, they would have to start manufacturing them. And you go to supply and demand.
Two things, Robert. Number one, Vito Tirso from the Sanitation Department just emailed me, no ocean dumping since 1935.
Really?
Yes, that's what he
said. I would never have guessed it goes back that far.
Number two.
Thanks for Vito.
Robert, you know, the trouble is the city can only do so much legally. We've changed the rules so our cabs are all being converted over 5 years. We can do it with our city trucks and cars to the extent that they make them. You know, a cop's car has to be fast enough to catch the bad guys. So if they don't make a hybrid that's fast enough, we can't do it. But they are getting there. Some of the big trucks, a lot of buses you'll see, it says, you know, natural gas or electric and whatever, that sort of thing. California, Arnold Schwarzenegger, the governor, who's really been a big environmentalist, has tried to put in what they call CAFE standards, which are the requirements for miles per gallon. And the federal law actually allows states to do it. But as soon as he tried to do it, the federal government stopped him from doing it, took him to court. Why? Because the automobile companies don't want it done. So, you know, you're right on what we should do. We're trying to do as much as we can. I'd love to tell you we could just order it. It'd be the right thing for the country, but that's not democracy.
The moment the marketplace turns around on here, they'll be all over the place, and we're seeing that happen.
You know,
when it comes to alternative
my daughter's,
energy.
I got to get this right, my daughter's father-in-law runs Hertz, the rental company, and he said Priuses, which are these hybrids, they can't get enough of them to rent. So the public is voting with their feet. The cab drivers have complained they can't get enough when they want to convert to hybrids. It's only Detroit that is way behind. And what I can never understand, Detroit, who has really lost a fortune, and half the jobs in Detroit have been lost because we tried to protect them. But the Detroit automobile companies are guilty too here. They make small, fuel-efficient cars around the world. They just don't make them and sell them in the United States. It's fascinating.
Because they didn't read the tea leaves.
But the Korean and Japanese companies that make most of their cars here, they read the tea leaves. Why not?
Even Mercedes-Benz with the smart car that they built.
Mercedes, right, builds these tiny cars, yeah.
As well. All right, let's go to Diane in Queens. Diane, your question to the mayor.
Yes, Mayor. Pleasure to speak to you.
And you.
I have a question. In the school cafeterias, could you answer me why untouched food, talking about milk, yogurt, cereal, and so forth, is thrown in garbage?
I don't know that they do. I can tell you this. We are trying to make the food healthier for the kids. Childhood obesity really is an enormous public health problem. It's one of the few public health problems in this country that's growing rather than being really addressed. And we've hired a group that try to make the food more attractive to the kids, because if it isn't good, they go out to the local store and buy stuff, you know, that maybe is not healthy for them and certainly fattening. I think most of it, we really do try to not waste any money. Some days there is food left over. Now, you can give it away, but then there are all sorts of health reasons. Some things you can, some things you can't. I will mention it to our school's chancellor and just urge him to make sure that
where we can... City Harvest, which goes around to restaurants.
Yes, but some things you can, some things you can't. Right. They might not want this, mm-hmm. you know. I don't know whether they need that much milk right. or whatever, so, but I will help Diane.
All right, you want to take another phone call here?
Sure.
Joe in Staten Island? Joe, good morning. What's your question for the mayor?
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. It's refreshing to hear your replies. You're very...
We're almost out of time. Get to your question, please, Joe.
In this day and age, is the order, the office of the borough president still relevant without a board of estimate? I mean, we have a wonderful man, but it's nothing more than a cheerleader.
Yeah, well, I think that you put your head on. Number one, you do have a good guy, Molinari was the previous one. Molinaro is the bald-headed one, is the way I tell him. He and I still the same problem. He's a great borough president. He is a great cheerleader. The other boroughs have great cheerleaders, I think, as well. It is not the job that it used to be when they had the Board of Estimate and they all voted on everything. The court said that was not democratic because each borough was a different size and each borough president had the same vote, and so they abolished the Board of Estimate. Today, the borough presidents are cheerleaders, but they also do something else. They do bring a local attention to problems that a citywide office like the mayor maybe can't do. And you can say, well, we should be in every neighborhood, every place. But, you know, here's another set of eyes and ears and requests. And I can just tell you, in my experience, Jim Molinaro has fought, for example, for an expansion of business on Staten Island. You go, there's this new box plant next to the plant where they take solid waste recyclables and make paper. This is a guy who has been a cheerleader, but not just a cheerleader. He's actually implements stuff. He just calls and calls. I mean, every time he calls, I say, well, you should talk to Commissioner so-and-so. I already did. Well, you should talk to this other one. I already did. I mean, he works. He's everything.
These people are advocates for their boroughs.
Yeah, and that's nothing wrong. And
it's expensive, though. I mean, there's a lot of money
involved. It's expensive in the grand scheme of things. If you didn't have them, you might have to have more city employees at the mayor's level. So I don't know that it's fair to say they cost you a lot of money. If you ask me, on balance, if God said to me, you can keep them or get rid of them, I'd keep them.
All right, there you go. That's unfortunately going to do it for today, Mr. Mayor. We are virtually out of time, but what do you say? I'm sure there'll be a few things that happen over the next week that maybe we'll get together and talk about next Friday.
We can do that.
Have yourself a great weekend.
You too.
Enjoy yourself. And that's going to do it for me, John Gambling, for Joe Bartlett and J.J. Kennedy and everybody here.